There's news the Weinstein Company is about to file for bankruptcy. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The movie studio founded by disgraced producer Harvey Weinstein is set to file for bankruptcy. This is after a statement last night from the Weinstein Company's three-person board after negotiations on a sale apparently fell through. It's the dramatic third act in a terrible movie. Marketplace's Ryan Kailath is here with more on this reorganization for a company that was a catalyst for the Me Too movement. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, David.
So where were we going into the weekend? A group of private investors, I think, had a deal on the table to buy the Weinstein Company for about $500 million.
Yeah, there were a bunch of offers out there. Most of them would have required the company to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This one didn't. This is the one that would have kept the company afloat, paid all the salaries, business as usual, paid off all the debt. It also would have put tens of millions into a victims fund to pay out settlements, and that may not happen now. The death blow on the deal seems to have come from one of the many lawsuits against the company, this one filed by New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman a couple weeks ago. He alleges, you know, gender discrimination, sexual harassment, more. The deal talks apparently fell apart after that.
So bankruptcy here, which the company was trying to avoid, is the likely next step. But which bankruptcy? The easier one or the harder one?
Yeah, this likely won't be Chapter 7. That's the one where you just pay off all the debt by selling all the assets. Chapter 11, instead, is the one where you don't have to do that. You can, but you don't have to. It's much friendlier to the company. The court lets it reorganize the business, pay off the debts over time. So most everything's on the table. Employees could be laid off, some assets sold. And yeah, the women that Weinstein's accused of harassing and assaulting, instead of the victims fund, they'll essentially become creditors. They'll move to the back of the very long line of people waiting for money from the Weinsteins.
All right, Ryan, thank you. This is the week that the new guy briefs Congress for the first time as Federal Reserve Chair. Let's check in with Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives as we start the week. Hi, Julia.
Good morning.
So a man by the name of Jerome Powell, who is the chief guardian of interest rates at the Federal Reserve, is speaking twice, one in each house of Congress, and he'll talk about the economy. What will you be looking for?
Well, he will be delivering the semi-annual monetary policy report, where he's sort of giving the report card for the economy to Congress and sort of laying out the Fed's plans. And I expect him to express confidence in the economy and confidence that the Fed can gradually raise interest rates.
And one thing the experts will be looking for is how Janet Yellen-like is he, or is he his own man?
That's right. I mean, the bond market has had a nervous start to the year because the economy is running strong. There's some question about whether we're about to see a move to a more aggressive tightening in monetary policy. My expectation is that Chair Powell will deliver a steady-as-she-goes message, patience, calm, and continued gradual approach to monetary policy.
All right. Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you.
My pleasure.
She's at the meeting of the National Association of Business Economics in Washington. Two economists, a conservative-leaning one and a liberal-leaning one, were just on stage. They're both worrying about the tendency in Washington right now to borrow money. Economists, as a group, Julia told me, tend not to believe in the idea of a fiscal free lunch. After decades of civil war, Colombia is trying to build peace between civilians and former guerrilla fighters, FARC. The Colombian government has paid out the equivalent of $3 million in reparations to 730,000 victims. But a group of people may have been left out. Sarah Barrett reports.
When Aura Inestrosa talks about her life, she divides it in two chapters.
La Aura que era feliz y la Aura que comenzaba a ser infeliz.
The Aura who was happy and the Aura who came after, she says. 18 years ago, Inestrosa was working as a journalist in Chocó, a western region in Colombia. She got a tip about FARC fighters in the area, but when she went to track them down, it was a trap. She says she was raped, beaten, and left for dead. Colombia's law 1448 states that victims of the conflict, whether they were hurt by rebels or by the state, may have a right to monetary reparations, but first they must make a declaration of victimhood with the government. Inestrosa, a lesbian, says she has filed her paperwork with the department. However, others in the LGBT community fear coming out to authorities.
muchas de las personas.
Many people prefer and opt not to register as LGBT with the state for fear of not being recognized as victims.
That's Alejandro Lanz, founder of Temblores, an organization for LGBT rights. He helped interview 20 transgender women in the capital of Bogotá. Most of them said they had been physically abused by police, and Lanz said,
the large majority of the trans women who were victims of the armed conflict did not know that they had the right to reparations, nor how to go about asking for them.
Sandra Angel is a member of a government advisory team tasked with addressing LGBT and gender issues. She says that while there is still a lot of discrimination in Colombia, LGBT people do have the same right to reparations. If a claim is investigated and approved for compensation, the next step is to determine how much is owed.
Every violent act has a certain monetary figure assigned to it, and when victims declare crimes against them, each one has an economic amount.
Inés Rosa is registered as a victim of the armed conflict and filed her claim 3 years ago.
Hasta ahora no se ha visto nada.
But she says, so far, she hasn't heard anything from the government about her case. In Colombia, I'm Sarah Barrett for Marketplace.
We're also watching the U.S. Supreme Court today, where oral arguments are set in a crucial case involving organized labor. It involves public sector employees who benefit from a union but who don't want to join the union. Should the non-union workers still have to pay in? If you missed our feature story on the air on Friday, it's at marketplace.org right now. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.